this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Mike, welcome to the show. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Craig. Glad to be here.
And you know what? I think the last time we actually talked in person was at a Yannick Silver mastermind almost 15 years ago. And the reason why I remember it is because we were at a little restaurant and we had profiteroles, which was the first time in my life I had ever had them. And the last time, because they're like crack cocaine. And I was like, I really shouldn't ever have these again. I think that was the last time we actually had a conversation.
Yeah. Man, that I can't believe it's been that long. It's crazy.
And now back then you were doing a lot of online marketing and you were really into Baja racing way back then. Did you keep that going for a long time?
I did. I after we did that with Yannick, I went and raced the Baja 1000. Was the first car race I ever did, which is kind of crazy to think about. And then became a professional race car driver with the Circuit of the Americas F1 track here in Austin. So got my my racing license, and then won the Mint 400 in Vegas, which was another big off-road race here in the U.S. So
that's super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what, business-wise, what have you been up to since then? I know I believe you had something around financial stuff, and then you have the self-made man and all the cool stuff in your podcast. What else, what specifically have you done, and then what is your focus these days?
Yeah, it's been a lot. Over that long of a time period, I started in internet marketing. I did have a financial education company from 2010 to 2014 that did really well. That's how I met a lot of the Agora family and Mark Ford and Porter and Tom Dyson and all of that crew. And then I got into, I started Self-Made Man and got really into personal development for men, did that for a few years, and then had a health crisis 3 years ago that really kind of took me away from work for almost 3 years, and have just really recovered, I'd say, over the last 6 to 9 months from that. And we recently launched a new business just 2 weeks ago, which is back on investing in finance, but really around the psychology of money and how people's internal subconscious programming and their neurochemistry actually affects all of their decisions when it comes to money and every other aspect in life. But specifically, we're focusing on money. And I've really noticed over the years that entrepreneurs specifically have a very interesting profile in the fact that we're natural risk takers. We like risk. We're very comfortable with it. We don't mind adrenaline. In fact, many of us, myself included, are addicted to it in many ways. And when we apply that same mentality to the money that we make, in other words, when we invest it, it typically doesn't go very well. It's the exact opposite kind of mindset or skill set that you would want. And it ends up causing this make it, spend it cycle that entrepreneurs get stuck in, and they can't really figure out why the cycle continues to repeat. And ultimately, it's because of the way that we're wired. And so this program is really designed to help people who have that challenge to rewire their minds for wealth, basically, to end that cycle.
Yeah, I noticed the other week you made an Instagram story just about brain chemicals and how it controls, you know, financial decisions. So I made a note to ask you about that later on, about the chemicals that control the mind. So I'll give a little teaser before, you know, for people listening, we're going to get to it. But first of all, what we want to talk about for a little bit of this show, Mike, is that we want to talk about cryptocurrency. It's something that you had mentioned to me is definitely something that you're super passionate about. Anybody who had bought their first Bitcoin in 2013, a mutual friend of ours, Matt Smith, introduced me to it back then. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And he ended up losing the first ones that he bought. But what drew you to cryptocurrency? I'm going to ask you about how many you think are actually lost in a moment. But what drew you to cryptocurrency? And how did you get started on your first investment with that?
It was the market crash of 2008. It was watching that take place, watching my friends and family lose half of their money in stocks. It was seeing Ben Bernanke and the helicopter money being dropped and the currency being debased. It was taking a huge interest in gold and silver at the time and precious metals. And if you were paying attention to the financial industry in any real way during that time period, you came across Bitcoin or Bitcoin came across your desk in some form or fashion. And, I remember being in New York at the same time Occupy Wall Street was going on and seeing signs for Bitcoin there and things about it. And I remember going online and looking and trying to figure out how to buy it. And this was probably in like 2011, really early days. And it was too squirrely, right? Like in order to buy Bitcoin back then, you had to wire or send somebody money.
I wired my money to somebody in Japan. And I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah. And so I remember being like, it's a little too weird for me, but it stuck in my head. And then in 2013, Mt. Gox was around. And so here's an actual exchange you can wire money into and buy Bitcoin directly from. So I wired $30,000 into Mt. Gox in, I think, February of 2013. I bought 400 Bitcoin at an average price of about $75. And then the next year in 2014, that Bitcoin got stolen when Mt. Gox got hacked. And so that today is going to end up costing me, probably $100 million plus by the time this current bull market is over. So I forgot about it until about early 2017. I started buying back in when it was $1,000. Really started to see the industry taking shape. I started buying Ethereum when it was $7 in 2017, and Coinbase is around now at this point in time. And then I really just got the bug, and I saw what it really was and how it was going to change the world. And frankly, went all in on crypto starting that year. And it is now still 90%+ of my net worth. But I've done obviously very, very well with it. And it has also come with a ton of volatility requirement of emotional maturity, if you will, in order to handle the volatility that is currently in the market and always probably will be for many years to come.
Yeah. So I guess what was it? October, was it 2018 or was it winter of 2018?
The market crashed in December of 2017 for Bitcoin.
How did you personally then weather it? Since then it kind of plateaued for a while and then crept up slowly and then all abruptly. So how did you deal with the down? And this is a great message for anybody who may deal with the loss of price in their house or their stocks or whatever it is.
Yeah. I had observed the bull market and crash of 2015, but I wasn't participating at that point. And so this was the first one that I really went through and had made a substantial amount of money, at least on paper.
Sure.
But I didn't sell because I didn't know when the top was. It's
basically 20X, right?
Yeah. From 1,000 to 20,000. But I did not sell because you don't know when the top is. And that's the hardest part about this entire investment. You don't know when the top is until it's 2 or 3 months after the fact. And so I wrote it. I never sold any of it, and I've kept it all until now. And now I have continued to buy in more and invest in more. But now I actually have a strategy and a game plan. I'm very much paying attention to the industry cycles, and when I think we're nearing the top, I'm going to start to average out, just like I've been averaging in. And then my strategy personally is to take all of the proceeds to put those into stable coins, whether it's Gemini or Tether or USDC. And then you can stake those stable coins on services like BlockFi or Celsius, and you can earn up to 10 to 12% per year on those stable coins, which is absolutely phenomenal. So you're out of the volatility of Bitcoin, right? It's in a stable coin. It's pegged to the dollar at that point. You're earning 10 to 12% return a year on it. I'll ride that down for about a year and a half to 2 years until the bottom of the next cycle. Then I'll take that money out. I'll put it back into Bitcoin and Ethereum and, you know, several of the other projects that I invest in, ride the next wave up and just repeat that cycle.
That's really cool. And I do want to ask you about some of the other alternative coins in a moment, like Monero and Litecoin and Ripple. But first, why don't we just take a big step back for a lot of people that are still like, what the heck is Bitcoin? And actually answer that question, Mike, how can you simply describe what Bitcoin is and why has it become so valuable?
Bitcoin is the first form of honest money that has ever been created in the entire history of humankind. And I know that that's a really big statement to make, but that's actually the case. And so if we look back throughout history, any and every form of money that has ever been created has been created by a king or a government of some kind. And they make the rules about the money. They make the rules about how much is in circulation, you know, what it's valued, how it's valued. And the problem with every single man-made form of money, which we'll just refer to as a fiat currency, is that the rules can be changed at any time by the creators, just like they're doing now, printing trillions of dollars in stimulus money over the past year. And that lack of control for an individual has massive impacts on all of us, on all of our purchasing power, on the inflation rate, on the price of products and services and gasoline and everything else. It really makes a huge impact on society and individuals. The next best form of money that we've had for the longest period of time has been gold. But gold is basically an infinite abundance as well. Yes, it requires some cost to pull out of the ground. But at the end of the day, nobody knows what the total supply of gold on the planet Earth is. And two, as the price of gold starts to rise, well, that incentivizes the miners to go dig more of it up out of the ground, which increases supply, which then reduces the price. And so from an investment, you know, perspective, it's okay, but it's not awesome. Now, Bitcoin, on the other hand, is the first form of money that, again, has ever been created that is independent of any government or state and that has a known finite supply. And so if you take this decentralized form of money that is under the control of no single individual, company, or nation state, and you make it completely transparent in the form that everybody can see the code, review the code, and see how it works, and then you give it a total finite supply that can never be changed or exceeded, and you give it all of the, you know, qualities that are needed for money, and the fact that it's infinitely, well, not infinitely, but highly divisible, it's completely private, it's completely secure. There's no form of money that you can put $1 billion in your pocket on a keychain or on your laptop or even in your brain just by memorizing a seed phrase and transport that across, government borders or nation state borders without any security issues, without it being seized, right? So there are so many amazing qualities that Bitcoin has that make it a superior form of money than anything else that currently exists. And the world is finally waking up to that fact, and they're waking up to it very, very quickly because of the abuse that we have seen over the last year, specifically from around the world, the United States and countries in Europe and everything else that they're doing to debase our existing financial system. And so that is what Bitcoin is to me, and it's what it's becoming for many, many other people, is the first fair, open, and free form of money that's ever existed.
So how are people able to use it today, and how will people be able to use it in 12 months from now and 5 years from now?
Well, Bitcoin specifically was intended originally to become a digital version of cash, right? But it kind of pivoted as people got to understand it better and how it works. They discovered that, hey, Bitcoin is not efficient enough to serve as a digital form of cash. It doesn't have the transaction volume that would be required for a society to use it like we would with a credit card or anything like that. But what it is It just happens to be the most secure computing network on the planet. So all of the computers and miners that are securing the Bitcoin network and the amount of computing power that's dedicated to doing that on a daily basis makes the Bitcoin network the single most secure computer network on the planet. It is literally impossible to hack right now. And maybe that will change at some point in the future with quantum computing and things like that. But if the Bitcoin network is ever hacked, then that's the least of our worries, because that means the banking network has been hacked, Wall Street has been hacked, our military has been hacked, the nuclear codes have been hacked, anything else. So, you know, a lot of people bring that argument up, but it really is a moot point at that point in time, should that happen. But it has become a store of value. It has become a form of digital gold, and it is very quickly replacing gold as a store of value around the world. Why would you park your money in a rock that you can just dig more of out of the ground, that you have to pay somewhere, and that's really cumbersome to try and transfer, when you can just use Bitcoin, which has, you know, better qualities, in my opinion, than gold does in every single category?
Is that what you think? Bitcoin, the gold prices are pretty stagnant these days?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Again, when you put them side by side, Bitcoin wins in every single category except longevity, meaning it doesn't have the multi-thousand year track record gold does. But if you take that category out, Bitcoin wins in every other form and fashion. So Bitcoin's role, in my opinion, is going to become digital gold. It's going to become a reserve currency for nations and for companies in the next 10 years, it's going to hit $1 million or more per Bitcoin. And I don't think many people are going to sell it at that point. I think Bitcoin is going to be something that you hold like you would if you owned the Empire State Building in New York. You would then take a loan out against it if you ever wanted to, because you would never want to sell an asset that is that valuable and that rare. You can stake it again on a service like BlockFi or Celsius. And right now you can earn, I believe, 6.4% per year on your Bitcoin, right? So why would you ever sell an asset like that when it's producing cash flow, it's appreciating in value, it's incredibly and increasingly rare, and you can still generate cash flow from it?
So, you know, the protocol says there were 21 million that could be created.
That will be, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so where are they now? It's 17 million or something. And how many do you think have been lost for good?
I think we're over 18.5 million have been mined so far. The last Bitcoin will be mined in the year 2140. Okay. And I approximate have lost about 25% of the supply that has already been mined. So theoretically, there's 18 plus million in circulation right now. I really think there's more like 12 or 13 million in circulation. And, you know, a lot of these hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin, when they were being mined for a penny or less, have just been lost on hard drives, right? Or computers.
That's what Matt did. Matt can't, you know, lost a computer hard drive or password or something. And
all kinds of stories like that. And those can never be retrieved. They're gone forever. So I think the total Bitcoin supply is going to end up being somewhere around 14, 15 million Bitcoin. And again, every single day, somebody's going to lose their Bitcoin somehow. And that number is just going to continue to drop.
What do you think the skeptics are missing about Bitcoin when they say, you know, the government will ban it or make it too hard to use, or that it, you know, it's like a tulip bulb mania sort of thing? What are people missing?
I think they're missing a fundamental understanding of Bitcoin. When I hear those arguments from people, that tells me that they have not spent a single hour studying Bitcoin. Because if you have, you would understand why Bitcoin has value. To have, again, a currency that, or a form of money that is completely private and secure, and that, again, you can send a $1 billion transaction for less than a buck on the blockchain without having to get a bank's permission, without having to get approval, you know, of any kind, or have to give your ID and, you know, all of that stuff. You just get rid of it. It has an unbelievable amount of value. So Tulip mania, you know, that happens once, people get fooled and they never do it again. Bitcoin is not a tulip mania because it continues to grow and grow and grow. 11 years into the cycle now, three different cycles. And each time the next cycle is higher than the previous one. That's not a mania. That is the birth of a real asset and a new asset class. And so that's a really interesting piece of this puzzle that I think people miss, is that this is the invention of a brand new category of technology that has never been seen before. It is as significant as the invention of electricity. It's as significant as the invention of the PC or the cell phone or the internet. It is a brand new category of technology that is going to completely change the world, and that is doing so very, very, very rapidly. And so for folks who again, call it a scam, they're just not paying attention. And frankly, it's just kind of a lazy cop-out because they're either confused or they're just too lazy to do their homework. And that's okay, because it's this kind of early adoption and this kind of tech is clearly not going to be for everybody. It is going to be for folks who are okay with that kind of risk and who have an interest in innovation and technology. So,
why do you think, people like Bill Gates and what does he stand to lose from if Bitcoin rises? And because he seems to be attacking it, and Janet Yellen attacking it. Obviously, the United States government has a lot to lose from it becoming, effective at what it does. Is it because these people have a lot to lose that they're doing that?
Well, I think people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett have an entire lifetime of experience. And with that comes a lot of confirmation bias, meaning they've observed how things have worked in their life and they know what works and what doesn't work. And then when anything that is completely new comes out of the woodwork, they're quite easily and quick to dismiss it because, again, they don't understand it. And they have a confirmation bias of 70 years of life that says otherwise. And so I think it's ego that causes them to do that. And unfortunately, or fortunately, time is the ultimate test, right? And Bitcoin just continues to chip away at that accusation or concern the more time that goes by and every single year that goes by, which is why you see people like Jamie Dimon calling Bitcoin a scam 3 years ago, and now JP Morgan is offering crypto services. Yeah. And so more people are, again, going to come to a place of understanding. And I think Bill understands Bitcoin now and takes it more seriously. And if he is still talking negatively about it from a public standpoint, there's probably a very good chance that he's trying to reduce the price so that he can buy in, which has become a common strategy for a lot of these banks. As far as the government is concerned, that was a concern, I would say, in the last bull cycle in 2017, because that was the year when Bitcoin was really became legitimized and took its place on the global stage. It couldn't be ignored anymore with $20,000 of Bitcoin. But what I think happened is that governments realized you can't ban it. It is decentralized. It is global. It is borderless, and you literally cannot do anything to shut it down. You can make it more challenging by making it illegal and saying it's illegal to buy Bitcoin on an exchange or from a bank or from a service. But at that point, you just put the technology in the hands of nation states and criminal organizations, and you also miss out on the technological innovation that blockchain is going to bring to the world and to countries. And I think Silicon Valley has done a tremendous amount of service and has provided a tremendous amount of value by lobbying Washington and actually going out and trying to educate the government on the value of blockchain tech. And they're basically saying, hey, this technology now exists in the world, and we can either be a country that embraces it and that brings all of that brain power and all of that talent and all of that innovation to the United States, just like we did with Silicon Valley. And that's how we became one of the dominant superpowers in the world, was through innovation. Or we can make it illegal, in which case all of that brain power and innovation is going to go to another country that does not. And when you're faced with that choice, you're like, okay, that would be a really bad decision. So we are going to legalize it. And now we're just going to regulate it, and we're going to turn it into a commodity or an asset and manage it just like we would gold, silver, or any other asset class. And so that's the position where they're at now. And so Bitcoin and crypto is being integrated into the existing financial system. It's now been given the green light and the clearance code from the CFTC, the SEC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. There are now federally approved custody institutions out there that will custody billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin for hedge funds and large financial institutions. There are now futures markets that have been legalized. Now we have the legalization for banks, your friendly neighborhood bank, to start to offer and sell and store crypto assets as well. And so it is being integrated into the financial system. And that's why this particular investment cycle is so critical, because this is the only investment cycle that will take place where the money on Wall Street comes into crypto. Once it comes in this cycle, it's in, and that opportunity is over. So if you are in crypto now, or if you've been in for a few years, congratulations, you beat Wall Street to the punch, and it's going to be an amazing ride, in my opinion, here in the next year or two specifically. But yeah, I think that's the state of the industry at the moment.
That leads me to my next question. You know, you mentioned before $1 million for the value of Bitcoin in the future. So technically people haven't missed out, but what do you say to people that fear they have missed out on buying it at lower prices, and they see the value of one Bitcoin as being $60,000, or, you know, this is going to go out in 2 weeks, so who knows what it's going to be when they hear this. What do you say to somebody who feels like, oh my gosh, I've missed out, the boat has left, and woe is me?
You know, people have missed out on the wild, insane 1,000x opportunity, but they have certainly not missed out on the 20, 30, 40, 50x opportunity. And especially it depends on your timeline, right? Like in the last 12 months to the week, Bitcoin has gone from a low of $3,800 12 months ago in March to now $60,000, right? So that's a 20x return in 12 months. And I think this bull market, Bitcoin is going to end up anywhere between $150,000 and $300,000. And so you can do the math on that, but it's substantially more than a 20x return in just 2 years. And so I think that's the kind of opportunity there is. And then I think after the next cycle, Bitcoin, whatever it ends up going to, will probably drop to $50,000 or $60,000. And then after that, it'll 10x again and probably end up at $1 million in the next cycle. The next cycle after that, 4 years after that, I think it's going to do a 10x again. It's going to hit $1 million per Bitcoin.
Wow.
Excuse me. Yeah. So we'll top out at 200 to 300 on this cycle. Next cycle, we'll top out at 500,000 to 1 million. After that, 1 million to 5 million is what I'm looking at.
Wow. Fascinating, man. Fascinating.